Hello, and welcome to SoberCast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting SoberCast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
It's called changing your mind. That's what it's all about. Nobody that I know wanted ahead of time to spend every night of the week in a smoky church basement. It turned out to be just perfect. And a lot of things like that. Points I like to make before I go into the steps that help me is they don't help anybody else. And that is, in AA, there isn't anybody who is an expert on anything except our own story. And so there's nobody who is the ultimate authority on any of the AA principles or what's going on. We are just another drunk trying to share to the best of our ability what we've learned about the steps. I know that I do, and I'm sure anybody that we get to fill in over here tries to follow the AA literature to the best of our ability and carry on the AA message as close to the way it was started as possible. And I think that's a responsibility of all of us in AA, is to pass on as close as we can what has been handed down because it works so well, rather than ad-libbing and coming up with some kind of a, you know, individualized thing. We start with the same basis, which is the 12 steps. And the other thing I would mention, if you are new, if you hear something in the discussion, or if a person is speaking at an AA meeting, you hear something that seems that it would be unacceptable to you, maybe we said it wrong, or maybe you heard it wrong. There just isn't anything in the AA program or its principles that should be unacceptable. They were purposely assembled that way so that no one would feel that there was a reason to not pursue this. And the reason for this program was put together by drunks, not college professors. And these drunks knew us real well because they were just like us. And they knew that if they ever incorporated in something in here that was mandatory, that you had to believe in, that you had to do, nobody would come. You know what I mean? They just knew that that's our basic nature. You know, remember how we are? And so it's structured in just a marvelously loose fashion, and all the program really is just trying to be of help and try to take you from that hell of alcoholism and get you out. And then you're on a journey, and there are some principles that have been handed down from generation to generation through philosophies, religions, psychology, medicine, and these have just been incorporated into our 12 steps, and they're just very practical guidelines to living, and that is what we talk about. And if there is something in the discussion that you would like to pursue, come on up and talk about it afterwards, but don't go away. That's what we don't want, is that your opportunity is now, and you get back out with that alcohol, and we may never see you again. There's just no guarantee you're going to get loose again from the clutches of alcohol. So we urge you to stick around and see how it turns out here compared to how it was going before you tried this, and give yourself a chance to see what's really in store for you. In dealing with steps 10, 11, and 12, which is the challenge today, I would just review very quickly that what gets us started on this entire program is being powerless over alcohol. That is what opens the door to an open mind. If we're powerless over alcohol, there's no way we personally can get out of the box we're in, our own illness of alcoholism. You can't study all about it and then just climb out. You can't learn your way out of there. You cannot set yourself free from alcoholism. You have to ask for help. And there's all the help in the world available. There's just an unlimited supply. The only thing blocking getting out of the box is our pride that doesn't like to ask for help or to admit that there's a box we can't get out of ourselves. And we just spend the longest time on our ego trips, each one of us, going, I'm going to figure this out. or we're worrying about the type of help we're going to get. Hey, what if they come in? There's a bunch of people who want me to straighten my act out. I'm not ready to straighten out yet. I've had a philosophy that you ought to live life all the way till 83, a couple months before you're going to die, then straighten out. You know what I mean? And then you get to the same destination anyway, but you have more fun along the way. And it's funny how us alcoholics, what we classify as fun. Dry heave. Hey, how's your life? Oh, great. I'm enjoying it. I'm just in charge here. You know, and to the outside world, they don't understand why we call this fun. And all those things we were doing in those drinking years. So this tremendous struggle with surrender is what leads us in to the rest of the steps. And it's just impossible if you... been working on any of these steps or principles in your life and they don't seem to be taking hold, it's probably because you didn't do the first step all the way. And you are partially alcoholic. And therefore you partially need the steps. And so the program will consist partially of doing what the program suggests and partially winging it. And this leads to great serious problems. Because nothing happens. In other words, the program really hasn't come in yet. There's no way, there's no entrance point, which is from the surrendering. And so we urge all newcomers to concentrate and take some time understanding the severity of your situation. And don't minimize it into making AA sort of an option. You know, well, I can go over there if it is, things aren't working too well, but in the basic day-to-day living, I'll just sort of keep my life the way it was, and I'll try to work AA in every so often. And the best approach in the beginning is try to work the rest of your life in every so often to AA, and shift the focus around the other way, and then compare how that's working. Again, it comes back to results, and it's a very result-oriented program, and a whole spiritual program is intensely practical. When you talk about a spiritual program, you talk about results. And we'll talk about that today in steps 10, 11, and 12. It's very, very practical, and we get to look at how it is working. Having arrived at a surrender, then it's easy to come to grips with the need for a higher power. We talk about a higher power, God as you understand him. Any definition, AA doesn't have the slightest idea of what the higher power is. It's what each person in this room says it is. That's the definition of the higher power. So that's not up for discussion. That's up to each individual. What we all have in common is, if there isn't a higher power, we're in deep trouble. That's where we start from. In other words, we have a problem that only a higher power can answer. There is no human answer to alcoholism. At least there hasn't been one shown up yet. And we've got the scientists from all over the world. We have some visitors today from Italy, and we're delighted that they're here, and who are thinking about alcoholism and thinking about its terrible impact on every society around. And we've had people thinking about how to solve the alcohol dilemma for many, many years, and there has been no human solution yet. I mean, there just isn't one. If there is one, we'd be hearing about it. We'd have large crowds of people going, hey, this is it. What we have is 1.5 million members of Alcoholics Anonymous who are living proof that there's a spiritual solution, which is quite different than your traditional medical solution or human solution. We have a group of spiritual principles, and when people with this problem follow them and involve a being powerless and get a higher power in their lives, then they get sober and happy. And that's the track record here. So this is how what we have in common is we have a problem, the only answer to which is a higher power. And that allows even the most prideful person to change their mind about a higher power and still look good. You know what I mean? I mean, I didn't change my mind just for the hell of it. They had a gun to my head. Change your mind about a higher power, I'll blow your brains out. Okay, I'll change my mind. You don't look so bad then. Especially those people at the bar that you convinced you were an atheist. You remember that discussion? I don't know. And we even have atheists in AA. The only difference is they pray. Sponsors and ask other people for help. And so I think I was in that category for a number of years. I was just didn't want to relinquish my grip on that label. I liked it. It was very, had a lot of going for it. But I think I had distorted it sufficiently to stay sober. And then, for convenience, I just changed it around to higher power for a number of years. It was higher power, and I'm very careful to say that, not God. And I just got tired of long syllable words and just said, how the hell would it? God sounds all right to me. But it was an amazing process of change over a period of 10 years, going all the way from there and finally just going, okay, I'll go ahead and say that, you know, like, I almost called a press conference to announce it. Alcoholic changing his mind on another major issue that is going to affect the entire planet, and I was fully expecting God to applaud. Oh, thank you, I've been waiting. You change your mind, now I can exist. But such is the nature of self-centeredness, and such is the nature of our problem, which is sobriety. As it turns out, the alcoholic's main problem is sobriety. Life is too painful, because we don't know how to live it. We don't have any game plan for living. We do not have a way of life. Our way of life was drinking, and now it is being taken away from us, and we're left unarmed. We're left without any protection between us and the world. We're left without a lot of things that other people who spent their years growing up are fully equipped for. And we suddenly find ourselves at whatever age we may arrive in AA, out there in day-to-day trying to fit in with the rest of the world and finding it each day extremely painful. And the meetings in the early days and months are great oasis in the desert of the days that we struggle through, and they replenish us and nourish us at the end of the day. And you notice how you come out of a meeting and you just sort of feel rejuvenated again. And it's a very vital spiritual process. We have taken something from that meeting that we can't quite put our fingers on, but we know what it feels like. And so for us, that is the proof of the program, is we can feel it inside that it's working. It leads us through the steps of coming to understand a higher power. We learn how the principle of inventory, of sharing with other human beings. We learn that when we talk about spiritual programs, that half measures avail us nothing, that there's no help that's available to become partially sober. And there's no help that's available to become partially honest. The problem with a spiritual program is very extreme. If you want to get a higher power to help you, you have to be targeting forever and ever increasing goals in becoming a better person, becoming more useful. And we learn that it's a program of growth, and all along the way we are changing, and hopefully for the better. And that's kind of what steps 6 and 7 talk about, and then 8 and 9 enable us to clear up the wreckage of the past so that we can finally get to where we are today, the ability to live a day at a time. It's very difficult. We have a concept in our 10th step that talks about living a day at a time, and it's very difficult to live a day at a time and drag 1966 through 72 with you as you chug along happily a day at a time. You know, and everybody else is just bouncing around, and you're dragging 6,000 pounds of baggage, which is called your past. And so we have 2 steps that are specifically designed to clear that up, making amends and going back, calling people, forgiving, getting rid of things and resentments and angers that we've carried around for years, so that we're free now to get into this 10th step, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Whenever I think of this step, I think of my old conception of what life was like, and my best example remains the pinball in the pinball machine, because that's how I felt life was. I was one of those balls that was down in the dark recesses of a pinball machine. You sat at the little bar stool down there with some other characters, and you just heard all the whanging going around, you know, and you're just mumbling in there and complaining about the world and this and that, and all of a sudden it was your turn. Remember that? Whack! Well, what the hell's going on? And they go, boom! Another day has started. You know what I mean? And Christ, you're out there, bam, 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 and people are
People are talking about, isn't life wonderful?
You go, what the hell are you talking about?
You know, hey, somebody cut me off. You're over here and the lights are going on and you're going,
and you're looking for that little hole down there, your favorite bar.
Where's my oasis to get the hell out of this rat race, you know? And just, oh, there it is. And you're just going to duck in there and a flipper comes out with you. No, no, not again. Come down in and go, phew, and you go, geez, am I glad to be back in here. This is, oh, this is terrible out there. I thought it would never end. You know, so, I mean, that's the way life looked. You were just out there, you were a victim. None of it made sense. There wasn't any, there was no starting point. It was just, what are they talking about? Life is fun, exciting. I understand it until I'm at the end. Now we come into the program, and we're given the missing ingredients. One of them was a higher power. In other words, in order to have all of this make sense, that we have to acknowledge the existence of something greater than ourselves, and then all of us can agree that we aren't the end and beginning of life, and we can become part of something. And that was what was so painful, was trying to be something as opposed to be part of something. As soon as you start, and it just seems to fit right into human nature. It's as if that fundamental construction was there, and trying to be something was causing me to be out of harmony with the fundamental nature of myself. The way I was really born was to be part of something. And once I got into a group and became part of this, and then part of AA, got these principles and became part of this, then I can become part of society. And then I found out as I moved around in various environment, I just went in and became part of the cocktail party, became part of the family reunion, instead of me in the middle of the family reunion. You remember that feeling where you just went, it's me and then all these strangers around, you know what I mean? Trying to screw up my space. Remember that? And they're attacking my modus operandi. I was, you know, it wasn't part of anything. I didn't understand that, didn't have the power to see it. What we get here is a new vision of the same information. It's all the same, we just see it differently. We see our family differently, we see ourselves differently. And we can't have this view of life without the power. It's like this view comes from, remember the third drink vision? Remember how different things looked after the third drink? We used to say that, well, things look different now. Said, why? You're still sitting in the same place. Nothing in the room has changed. Why do you say they look different? I don't know. Third ounce of vodka went, and it came up, and I said, hey, it looks a lot better. And so, in a sense, we had a bottle of power. And we went, and it went down and activated a better vision system. And we just looked around and said, well, if the world always looked like this, then that makes sense. And we were part of something. You remember that? We just felt like you'd fall in love with the whole bar. You were just part of it. And it just, it gave you a power to stop being self-centered, and you just got into it. And of course, 10 drinks later, it went out of control, and we beat the hell out of our newfound friends. But we kept trying to manage the amount of chemicals in there. Well, I've obviously put too much in there. I mixed the scotch and the wine. I'm going to hit this formula so that I have that view all the time. I'd be on to something. We're just like a chemist working year after year, fine-tuning this system. I don't want to get down too low, and I'm shaking and puking and coming apart. I just get that maintenance level. Just remember all that screwing around trying to get that right view of the world? Well, this is what this program is designed for, is to give us a power, similar to vodka, only one that loves us, that is available in an infinite supply, absolutely free. All we have to do is ask for it and make ourselves ready to receive it. And this day-at-a-time program is designed to give us a basic game plan for living each day, and right off the top is inventory. Inventory is one of our most spiritual principles. Inventory forces us to stop looking around at what's wrong out there, and see what's wrong with the glasses. Oh, the view is wrong. You see, the world isn't wrong, our view of it is. So we go, uh-oh, the world's all screwed up. Instead of going, what's wrong out there? Inventory says, now go in here and see where the glasses, they slip down your nose. There, how's that? Oh, it looks better. So we always learn to turn to ourselves to fix and see where we're out of step with the rest of the world, or where we're out of harmony with the world. And this inventory process is the method, it is the spiritual method of refocusing on
that part of the equation that can be changed, which is ourselves. It gives us the power to fix life in the possible side rather than the impossible, which is to get the whole world to adjust to us, which is the old way we were living. And so it is suggested that we incorporate inventories into our day. We take a spot check inventory when we get out of whack during the course of the day's events, that we take a little break for a minute or so in the middle of the day, that when we get up in the morning, start out with a little quick review of the day. At the end of the day, take a look back on how the day went, how we might have done a little bit better. Maybe every 6 months or so, go out for a weekend and just sort of try and put all the parts back in the right places and take a break from being tied into the system so much, and just always keep the machinery itself and our perspective right, and then everything else seems to straighten out. So inventory becomes a very practical day-at-a-time way to live. The guidelines that are suggested, and I would be, I'm glad I wrote that down because I had forgotten the great line out of the 12 and 12, which always comes with the 10th step. It's a spiritual axiom that if we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with us. And when Bill wrote that, he immediately followed it with, what about justifiable anger? Which is a great drunk's reaction to hearing that first line, you know what I mean? Hey, if you're upset, there's something wrong with you. That's a little too heavy. And we counter, right? We never take this stuff just lying down. We go, wait a minute, that principle is not quite fully accurate. What about justifiable anger? We want to come back with, and of course for an alcoholic, all our anger was justified. It's the other guy's anger that isn't justified, because we can see from out here he's overreacting. And so what this is suggesting is the way to make good decisions, the way to get through the day is to always get undisturbed first. Get undisturbed first. Then we go back and see the true magnitude of the problem. Because generally, the problem simply is, we're disturbed. You know what I mean? This happened, and that guy did that, and I'm disturbed. So we're focusing in on, see, what just happened here? You said that, I said that. What if we could get undisturbed? Then this becomes irrelevant. This one just, I forgot what it was. There was something that went here and there, and it doesn't even matter now. It doesn't matter, because we got undisturbed. And so we shift the focus on, how can I get undisturbed, or, better yet, how can I not get disturbed in the first place? This is advanced sobriety. And so, we're left with some four little guidelines that come up during the day, and they go like this. And you got to remember now, this is involved with a higher power. It's involved with asking for these things. These things are impossible to generate by ourselves. And the first one is self-restraint. The 10th step has the top priority of everything we could ask for. To get up in the morning, you want to ask for one thing that day, ask for self-restraint. Self-restraint is the ability to have the world happen to you and then have the time to think about it before you react back. And that's a gift, because most of us, somebody goes, I don't know what, and we go, oh, ooh, sorry about that. And our son walks in and goes, Dad, I gotta go. And you go, get out of here. Ooh, I don't want to have that. I would like to get that look back, because that takes a year to undo that unkind look in your 3-year-old son. And so if you could just go, oh, and he goes, oh, and here it is, it's stirring around here. Yes, son. If I could just have the time to do that. If I could just have that cushion, because there's a lot of things I do that I immediately want to take back because I've changed my mind about them. But they're already done. They're already out there, and I'm stuck with them. Lousy decisions, stupid answers. Because I didn't have a cushion between me and the world. The Bible talks about wearing the world like a loose garment. And how do you get a loose garment? How do you get a cushion between you and the world? You ask for it. Now, to us intellectual types, we go, oh, you're back to that gaze again. You asked for it. Well, that's practical enough for me. I want to see a box with a loose garment in it. Check it out, and I want to give you the money, and then I get it. I mean, I don't like this vague stuff where you ask for it. I mean, what the hell kind of a deal is that? And then we go back to our sobriety. Where does your sobriety come from? How did you get your sobriety? And you look about it and you say, I don't know, I came to AA and I just asked for it. I said, please help me. And what did you get? I got sobriety. Well, what is sobriety? Did you figure out your alcoholism? No, I didn't figure it out. Well, what happened to your alcoholism? I don't know. It just went away.
and the alcohol problem doesn't get solved, it gets removed. The big book talks about what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual condition. So as long as we're working on the steps, other things happen. And we're chugging along, taking inventories, making amends, and suddenly we realize we forgot to worry about drinking for a month. You can chalk it up to coincidence. But when's the last time you, as a drunk, forgot to think about drinking for a month? When you forget to think about drinking for a month, that's freedom from booze. That is total freedom. That is what it's all about. And the same power is available on all the other things that are disturbing us. We can ask to be set free from them. And a lot of times that doesn't look like the right answer. I'm uptight about money. Good. I'll get rid of the uptightness. No, I'd rather have the money. I don't think I like that first answer. Okay, here's the money. How do you feel? I'm uptight about losing it. Well, what do you want? I don't know. Do you want peace of mind or money? Why do you have to choose between those two? And when you're standing up here with a gun at your head, $1 million in this hand, you go, I'll take the peace of mind. I mean, we finally get a set of priorities and we find out we would like sobriety at any cost. Even our choice, even our ego, even our pride. And we get rid of all those things and we find out those character defects were weighing us down. We were clutching on to the very things that were the worst for us. And so spiritual answers are kind of backwards in all of these things. The problem doesn't get solved, it gets removed. And it just sounds like it's a cop-out. What kind of a solution is that? It's a wonderful solution. It's an incredibly freeing solution. You just go through the day concentrating on other things, and the very problems themselves just don't occur. And as we go through life in this instance, we ask for self-restraint to have the cushion to go through the day. Obviously, we can't go through the day perfectly, so there's going to be incidents that occur. There's going to be things that where we end up disturbed, and it's only going to involve other people. And when it involves other people, the last three items in the list of four that I was talking about go as follows. If the fault is ours, then we admit it immediately and straighten it out and make an amend immediately. Oh, sorry about that. Yes, oh, okay, cool. And that fixes it. Gets the thing back to undisturbed, gets the board erased so that we're free to go on to the next incident. If we decide the fault is the other person, you forgive them. Just go, oh, hey, you probably had a bad morning this morning. And that's it. My friend Ed Chandler likes to talk about every day he lets five people off the hook. He just says, oh, I'm going to let five people be wrong. They're wrong, that's fine. That person's doing something wrong, that's fine, that's fine. And then having a real bad day, let 10 people be wrong. Let everybody be wrong. Pretty soon you stop keeping track of whether people are doing things right or wrong. And then you realize, why was I keeping track of everything that's right or wrong in the world? Because you were God. It was your job. When you are self-centered, who else is going to keep track of all of this if I don't? And we are. You just got to stop doing that. Okay, I'll stop. Well, how do you stop? You ask for it. Because you can't stop on your own any more than you can forgive anybody on your own. You ask for the power to forgive. So this is all a spiritual program, so we have to be plugged into a higher power in order for any of this to work. We hear these principles and we run out and we go, well, I'm going to start out tomorrow with a nice little cushion between me and the world. And you walk out, what the hell happened to the cushion? You can't generate a cushion. You get up in the morning and say, I would like a cushion today. Well, coincidentally, you have one. It's involved, it's getting rid of this pride and ego. So those two are the ones, oh, I forgot that after we get disturbed, we have to have an honest analysis of what's wrong. We have to ask, because this is the serenity prayer. The serenity to understand, to accept the things I cannot change, the wisdom to know the difference. And if it is something that was mine, then I can make the amend. If it's something that someone else, I can ask for the power to forgive them and move on to the next item. What it does in individual little situations all throughout the day, it enables me to come out undisturbed. It gives me the power to just go from situation to situation, and all of a sudden you look back and you go, you know, that stuff used to bother me. You ever, I think anybody who's been in the program a while has suddenly looked around and go, you know, that stuff used to bother me. My mother-in-law used to bother me. She straightened out. You know what I mean? She didn't straighten out. We got some power in our lives to not have that bother us. And then, so sobriety is going through all the million things that bother us and getting rid of them. And that is where peace of mind really comes from. And this is what is suggested in our 10th step. In the 11th step, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out, obviously has to do with prayer and meditation, has to do with a very spiritual dimension. And what is suggested here is that if, as we've chugged along in our first 10 steps, we have found that a higher power really has had, without a doubt, some impact on our lives, doesn't it make sense to try and get to know this higher power, our own personal one, better? It is as if we had dug around in ourselves and found a little gold mine. We found something about ourselves that we never really knew existed. It was a part of us that liked to be useful, that wanted to reach out to other people. It was a part of us that we may not ever have been in touch with before. And it is suggestive, doesn't it make sense to try and go in and explore that even more? Why don't we get to know that part of ourselves as best as we can, because won't that bring us the best results for our own lives? Yeah, it would. Well, how do people become closer to this part of themselves or to the to a higher power? The techniques that have been around in all ways of life involve prayer and meditation. They just happen to be the two most commonly used words when you talk about trying to accomplish this. And in the big book, Bill talks about moving our thinking to a higher plane. And I've always liked that. We have, at any given moment, a choice of all kinds of things to think about. You know how your brain just kind of goes, oh, see a Budweiser ad, you go, you see an ad, a shot of the beach, and all of a sudden you go, hey, Session by the Sea is coming up pretty soon. I mean, your mind just, you know, as visually, isn't it? And left to its own devices, it'll stay at the earthy level, whatever you want to call that. I mean, just sort of leave it there. It just wanders around looking at people and things and new cars, and it just kind of keeps track of all the stuff you'd like and don't have, and you know what I mean? And that's where it'll just stay. And that's why with our literature, 24-hour day book, it takes it off of that plane and goes somewhere else. And when we're at a different level of thinking, we feel better. And so meditation is a way of getting away from the standard level of thinking and moving to a higher level. Now, what happens is it moves us out of self-centeredness. So that's why it feels so good. The idea of doing it never sets well. You mention this to most of us, and you just go, because all of our instincts don't want that to happen. That means that we'll be thinking about something other than us. Heaven forbid I might take my mind off of me for a second. You know what I mean? Which is my favorite subject. Have you ever noticed that? So we just talk about, you know, oh, what are you into? Oh, I don't know. I think about this and that. So meditation is a technique of getting out of ourselves for a certain amount of time during the day. We start out with a 24-hour day book in the morning. It is a just a very mechanical method of accomplishing a spiritual goal. Now, prayer and meditation present interesting challenges if you've never really incorporated it into your life. If you're a typical self-centered alcoholic, and somebody mentioned prayer as a daily way of sustenance, you are left with the following information, that you're 43 years old and you've never done this. And so you have to explain that. And your ego says, well, you haven't done it out of, I mean, you haven't taken this position out of stupidity, right? You have taken it because you know secretly that it doesn't work, even though you've never tried it. And this is explained. This is how you protect your ego. So you explain why you've never done any of these things. And I remember just going, the reason I haven't done it, it doesn't work. And Bill writes about this. He said, many of us are afraid to try this on a daily basis, much as a scientist is afraid to perform a certain experiment lest it prove his pet theory wrong. Such is the dilemma of not wanting to change our mind. And we just are so skeptical that when we get to this step, many of us, we just go, don't give me that stuff about just going in and saying a few prayers every morning. I just, you know, and this part of us just doesn't want to do that. And it turns out to be a most practical, very practical thing. In other words, it is something where the benefits can be measured almost on a daily basis. You can compare a day that you don't start out with a 24-hour day book to one where you do. And sometimes they are just dramatically different. And so one of the things that is suggested in the 12 and 12 is the prayer of St. Francis. And I always like to read this, since for many of us this may be the entire meditation program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is for me. This is the Serenity Prayer, a little 24-hour day book. And it's on page 101 in the 12 and 12. And it's a prayer that's been around for centuries, and it simply says, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love. That where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there is discord, I may bring harmony. That where there is error, I may bring truth. That where there is doubt, I may bring faith. That where there is despair, I may bring hope. That where there are shadows, I may bring light. That where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted. To understand than to be understood. To love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. And here is a very workable prayer that can be meditated on. And you get it, and I don't know about you, the first time you get something like that, you spend a little time, you look at it, better to forgive than that, and better to understand than to be understood, and you go, what has this got to do with not having a job? I mean, I don't know if you have those kind of thoughts, and you just are sitting here, and you're all fired up about what your sponsor suggested, and you actually follow his direction for a change, and you're just sitting there going, through this particular thing, you go, what has this got to do about not having a job? And you know, you spend some time rereading this and thinking about that question, and you're meditating. You're honestly going, what does this have to do with the problems that I'm encountering today? And as time goes by, I think we find we start getting answers to these things. We start getting insights into ourselves that we never had before. And they seem to be associated with this process called prayer and meditation. The second half of that step simply directs us away from ourselves and the temptation to pray for specific things. Even sometimes you go, I'm going to go spend my whole day praying that cousin so-and-so recovers from this fatal illness. And Bill points out, well, that may be, on one hand, a generous prayer. On the other hand, there's a degree of self-centeredness to this thing that we have determined how this must turn out. And that is certainly not our jurisdiction and can lead to a lot of frustration. And that isn't it. We can just pray that the right thing happen. We pray for something good if it be the higher power's will. But for most of us, we have a tendency to superimpose our own judgment right even into a spiritual program. You know what I mean? God, I'll tell you what the right thing is, and I'm going to send you after your help to turn out that way. And I'm sure you'll see my way if you pay attention. And then it doesn't turn out that way, and we say prayer doesn't work. And so that, now I've left myself very little time to wrap this up with the 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. It goes without saying that the 12-step work that we do is most rewarding, that we find when we're able to help and carry on this message to the new person, that there is immeasurable joys, and that is certainly a vital part of the 12-step. But even beyond that is the practice these principles in all our affairs, and a brief discussion of the spiritual awakening. Having had a spiritual awakening, what they use in AA, and I think is a very good definition of a spiritual awakening, lest you get put off by it, is a personality change. It is a personality, profound personality change. A person who was very negative is suddenly very positive about everything. A person who had no hope whatsoever is suddenly brimming over with hope and yapping away about, I'm going to get a job and I'm going to roll in. And you go, good, what the hell happened to that person? That isn't the way they were last month. Or they blah, blah, blabbing away and they're going to go do this and that. And what happened here? Yeah, we just use that term, we're just spiritual awakening. Some fundamental change in the person's spirit has been changed. Their outlook on life has somehow been changed for no apparent reason. They didn't inherit $1 million. They didn't get a promotion. As a matter of fact, everything's very borderline. And their outlook has been changed immeasurably. And it's a gift. We don't know when this is going to occur to individuals who are arriving or who are practicing these principles. What the steps do is make us ready to receive this gift so that when our name comes up, we're there. It's like building a mailbox if you want to get mail. It's the only requirement from the post office. You know what I mean? You got to have a mailbox. We'll take care of the rest. And, you know, someone says, well, I don't feel like building a mailbox. Well, then you don't get any mail. You know, I mean, it's that simple. So the steps are a way of building ourselves so that when it arrives, there's a place to put it. And it'll arrive at the right time. And sometimes it arrives slowly, sometimes it arrives quickly, but it does arrive. There's one with everybody's name on it. It's just a question of being available to receive it. Now, as far as working the principles, due to the extreme shortage of time, I will use my favorite story in explaining. The 12th step goes into all of the problems that we encounter in sobriety. It talks about life is going to be filled with a series of events for each one of us, and how you handle them is what sobriety is all about. And when I was sober about 8 years, I was sober about 2 years, I got thrown out of the Marine Corps. That was my first resentment to, you know, squared. And I go to a meeting every night and all these things, and then bam, I'm out. You know, 6 kids, and I was going to make a career. I had 14 years. I'm out. And I want to tell you, there was a resentment building. And whenever you want to keep a resentment, don't go to meetings. Go up in your room by yourself, and you can nurture it and get it out of control, if you know what I mean. Wow. And eventually, that's so painful that I finally went to a discussion meeting. You know how the leader says, anybody got a topic they'd like to talk about or a problem? And I'm like, ooh, and I had my hand up. Thrown out of the Marine Corps. Victimized. No money, kids, go to meeting every night, unfair program, God, whatever you want to call it. And they said, fine, let's talk about Sandy's problem here today. And they started with the first guy over here, thrown out of the Marine Corps, serenity prayer. Hey, what the hell kind of crap is that? Serenity prayer, I'm talking about getting thrown out of the Marine Corps. You know, I'm not fooling here this morning. So they go to the next guy and he's going, you got to get involved helping other people. That's what I'd do if I was thrown out of the Marine Corps. What about a job? What about a job? Next guy says, take an inventory, a 4-step inventory. Get a handle on all your character defects. I'm looking for help. I'm looking for help here today on advice. I'm hearing crap from these people all around the table. Last guy said, prayer of St. Francis. Prayer of St. Francis, most powerful thing in the book. That's what I'd do if I was thrown out of the Marine Corps. I just walked out of there and I made 2 resolutions. Never bring a problem up in a meeting again. And never go back to that group. Life has its way, and 6 or 7 years later, I'm going through a divorce. And now I'm losing the 6 kids. Somebody else is moving in. I'm moving out. Resentment time. And I'm back and nurtured it alone for a number of months until I had it quite manageable, and then went to the meeting. Somebody says, has anybody got a topic today? I said, I've got a topic. Outrageous. I'll go to the 8-year sobriety room, divorce and the pain and the crying and the sin. Said, all right, we'll discuss divorces and pain and rage and everything that we see here tonight. And we'll start around the room. First guy said, divorce, serenity prayer. The answer to a divorce, clearly serenity prayer. The other guy said, you got inventory yourself. You're resentment. Look at you. You're a mess. Inventory. What you have to do, and if I said, forget yourself, but go down to the inner group and get on the phones down there and get involved with some new people. That's what you got to do if you're getting divorced. And the last guy said, prayer of St. Francis. That's what divorced people should use all the time. And I won't bore you with the details, but 4 or 5 years later, due to some unfortunate business turns, I was experiencing bankruptcy and all the fun of watching possessions disappear and slide away and all that. So I decided one last resort, I would bring bankruptcy up at the meeting. Obviously, we're not going to get anything spiritual in a bankruptcy. And you know the ending. The guy was still there, and he went, "Bankruptcy, glad you asked. Serenity prayer." Bankruptcy, inventory, go up to the desk, and the prayer of St. Francis, and it turned out, no matter what the problem was, there was one answer, and we see it in all of our literature, more spiritual growth. And that is really what the 12th step is saying, and I pasted in, since we're right at the end of the hour, and I'd like to read this, when it was in Time magazine, when John Lennon was shot, and they had this song published in there. It was called "Watching the Wheels." I remember reading it and being captured by our 12th step when I read it. It said, "People asking questions lost in confusion, well, I tell them there's no problems, only solutions. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. I really love to watch them roll. No longer riding on the merry-go-round, I just have to let it go." And I guess the line that caught my eyes was, there are no problems, only solutions. And what we have in AA is a solution, and our program consists in working the solution. And when we work the solution, when we look up, there's no problems. Because we've been working the solution, our view is always such that there aren't problems. You see, the problems are in the view. Everything is the way it's supposed to be. It doesn't look right. And what we have here is the power to see things right. And when we do that, it's incredibly beautiful. And so I think that's what the message of these 12 steps and the hope that's here, you will always have the power to have a good view. And when you think about it, what the hell else is there? That's not a bad deal. We're at the end of the time. I remind everybody that we have another meeting in here in 15 minutes.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.